The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John. There was a wedding at Cana in Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Jesus and his disciples were also invited to the wedding. When the wine ran short, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." And Jesus said to her, "Woman, how does your concern affect me? My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servers, "Do whatever he tells you." Now there were 6 stone water jars there for Jewish ceremonial washings, each holding 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus told them, "Fill the jars with water." So they filled them to the brim. Then he told them, "Draw some out now and take it to the head waiter." So they took it. And when the head waiter tasted the water that had become wine, without knowing where it came from, although the servers who had drawn the water knew, the head waiter called the bridegroom and said to him, "Everyone serves good wine first, and then, when people have drunk freely, an inferior one. But you have kept the good wine until now." Jesus did this as the beginning of his signs at Cana in Galilee, and so revealed his glory, and his disciples began to believe in him. The Gospel of the Lord.
Yeah, it's a great gospel passage here. We are second Sunday in ordinary time, but we're confronted with a passage from the Gospel according to John. We should know we're in cycle C, which means we're supposed to be reading from the Gospel of Luke. And again, I think this is this passage is given to us for any number of good reasons. One of them is that this is an Epiphany gospel. In fact, the church traditionally recognizes as the Epiphany 3 events. One is the visitation of the wise men to Jesus in Bethlehem, to baby Jesus in Bethlehem. The second is the baptism of Jesus. And the third is this, the wedding feast at Cana, the revelation of God as man, or God's, say, arrival on the scene as Jesus of Nazareth. And so I think we have this gospel passage for that reason. We would, if we celebrated it today, we would be in Epiphany tide, we're left with this kind of remnant, or this artifact perhaps of a bygone era. But it's not that simple as to wrap it up in that bow and kind of push it back in time and discard it. The passage has so much for us that we're right to use it in our celebration here at the beginning of this cycle C, even though it's not in the Gospel of Luke, because it gives us a great frame of reference that allows us to enter into the story of Jesus of Nazareth, what he's doing, what it means, and why it's important for us today. And so, this might a bit of throat clearing, perhaps, in order to get to the passage itself. What we see in the passage itself is, again, the beginning of Jesus's public career, the beginning of his public ministry, the beginning of his revealing the glory of God. This is the commentary that we receive in the gospel. Right? Jesus did this as the beginning of his signs at Cana in Galilee, and so revealed his glory. And this is what we're supposed to see then in not only this sign, but in the 6 signs that follow, all the way to the 7th. And the 7th, I'm ruining the end of the story for you, but the 7th sign is the crucifixion of Jesus, which makes sense even with this particular passage, because in the Gospel of John, we have Mary, his mother, appearing twice, once here and once at the foot of the cross. And just as this, as the wedding feast at Cana, the water into wine miracle is a sign of the revealing of God's glory, so too the cross is the culmination of that. We have to hold that together and grapple with that as best we can. And I say, offer just a word about that. What Jesus is doing in his life, in his mission, is he's renewing the covenant of God with his people. So what we see is Jesus is the new Israel, gathering a people to himself to live out the original promise of Israel, which was to bring God's blessing to all the nations. So what Jesus has to do is renew that people. And there's a sign here also in this passage. The renewal is effected from inside, but goes far beyond what people would have expected. How's it? What do I mean? I mean that the stone water jars that we see are used for the Jewish purification ritual. Well, this is, of course, the purification of the people of God. And Jesus takes that very thing in order to renew and purify his people. But he goes far beyond what was ever expected. I say this, like, Jesus operates here at the as a response to the need of these particular people who run out of wine at their wedding feast. And it's a really big deal for them. Although, you know, in the grand scheme of God's story, it seems relatively insignificant. But for these particular people, this is kind of like the end of the world, right? This is a real problem. It's not simply just, a little bit of an issue. This is like the disgrace of the fact of their running out of wine is significant, especially as they begin their newly married life. And it's perhaps orders beyond what we would tend to expect, because, can I say this? We don't know how to party, right? We, like, have a hard enough time making it through one evening with the newly married couple. These guys would go for days. They'll go for days, right? It's a massive party. And they're able to keep it up because they can celebrate the goodness of God's creation in a way that I think we've lost. Right? Because I think we all too quickly turn our celebrations in on ourselves. It's about our pleasure, our gratification, and the rest. But this celebration of God's good creation ought to go on for days, right? So I'm not give you ways to plan your future parties, you know, but make sure they go on for days. The problem is, if they're going to go on for days, you got to have enough wine, yeah. And this is the challenge: they run out. But how much wine did these people need? And how much does Jesus provide? Because, I mean, if you're like me, you would doing these calculations as we go, right? It's 6 stone water jars, 20 to 30 gallons apiece. So we're in a realm of 120 to 180 gallons of wine. Okay, now, do we know what that looks like? I'm not sure, because many of us don't bottle wine, right? But what it is probably between 800 and 1,000 bottles of wine. That's an incredible amount, right? I mean, that goes beyond their need? Like, they don't need 1,000 bottles of wine. John is looking at me suspiciously, like, maybe they do need 1,000 bottles of wine. No, they don't. In order to meet the need, they do not need 800 to 1,000 bottles of wine. But this is a sense of how God's provision goes well beyond what's expected. It goes well beyond what's sufficient, okay? Now let me try to apply all that stuff to us, because we're not the ones running out of wine, except perhaps we're running out of the wine, not necessarily of God's blessing, but of our experience of God's blessing. Yeah, the challenge for us is that we like these people very often in our lives, find ourselves in situations that I've called like dead end streets. We've been. Let me extrapolate a little bit. We've been called by Christ. And what have we been called to? We've been called to go the way of love. We've been called to go the way of self-gift. In fact, that's the whole run of this of the narrative of John's gospel. If this is the revealing of the glory of God, and the culmination is Jesus on the cross, then the whole story is about the pouring out of his life in faithfulness to his people. And then, of course, you know, what is our response to God who pours out his life for us, except that we are made to give ourselves away as well, both in praise of God and in service of him giving ourselves recklessly away in his cause, in his service, for the good of the people around us. So you have this, when we find ourselves summoned into, right, summoned to God's service, when we find ourselves as the chosen people, the people being renewed by the love of God, then we know that we are meant and made to go the way of love, the way of charity. I say charity, right? But I just mean love. I mean love like willing the good of the other for the sake of the other. Right? We find ourselves, we have to go the way of charity. We have to go the way of love in all things, at all times. And Jesus is leading the way. He's called us to follow him. And we've given our yes. Yes, we will follow you. And we will follow you on the way of love. And we can only do that, can I say, by faith. By entrusting ourselves to Jesus every step of the way, we're able to go the way of love. At all times, in all situations, right? In all times, in all situations, we can follow Jesus. We have to trust him, entrust ourselves to him, and go that way of love with him. That's what he's called us to. But we find ourselves trying to live in his service, but facing down, again, what I've called dead-end streets, right? Where we don't see how our efforts are going to be enough. We don't see how we're able to persevere in the way of love where we are in this particular situation with this particular person. I'm coming up short. I can't do it. And what then is the resolution of that? Is it to say, okay, well, God, you know, like, I know you've called me into your service, but you've likely made a mistake. I'm not good, you know, I'm not good enough for this. I can't possibly do it, and so on and so forth. That's not at all. In fact, the story, this narrative gives us some sense of what our story is supposed to look like. Yeah, we find ourselves coming up short. Maybe it's by our own mistake. Maybe not, right? Maybe we didn't plan for this, like they didn't plan for to have enough wine. Or maybe it's not. Maybe we just find ourselves in a situation where our own resources are simply not enough to meet the needs that we're confronted with. What do we do then? What do we do? Well, two things. One, we make sure that Jesus is on the scene. Right? How often do we just go it alone? We just say, well, you know, like, my efforts are being frustrated here. So I'm just going to be intractably angry at the whole thing. And just, you know, I'm going to swear this off. You know, I can't do it. So I'm not going to try. I'm going to give up. Right? It's us. It's self-referential. Where is Jesus? He's called us into his service. We want to live in his service. We need the strength and power that he provides. Where is he on the scene? Did we go and seek him out? Have we turned to him in prayer? Are we in relationship with him? Where is he? Is he on the scene? That's the first part. The second part is to bring our whole selves to him, right? To put everything we have at his disposal, even bunch of water jars, right? What good is this? You know, but we're going to put everything at his disposal. We're going to bring our whole heart, our whole life to him, and we're going to follow Mary's command. Do whatever he tells you. Do whatever he tells you. And when we do whatever he tells us, that world of new possibilities opens up for us, and we can take the next step in the way of love. Trusting and following Jesus. And can I say, like, even the way that I'm saying it, at least in my mind, sounds somewhat transactional. We're going to bring our stuff, he's going to give us his stuff. But look at what happens. You know, we bring his stuff, it's just a bunch of water, and what he gives us is something nearing 1,000 bottles of wine. Right? He doesn't just meet our need, he goes beyond it. And of course, he's going beyond it with the outpouring of his Spirit. He's going beyond it with the love of God made flesh for us. He's not simply pointing the way. He's going the way with us, and he is sustaining us, strengthening us with his own life of love at work in us and working through us so that we can go that way with him. And when we realize that this is the story of our faith, what's left for us except to be thankful? What's left for us except to, to rejoice in the Lord's provision that goes well beyond what we could ever ask for or imagine. We're called in that sense to swim in his love, to be provided for by his compassionate care for us, and to bring his compassion and his kindness, his charity, his love to life wherever it is he sends us, for whomever it is he sends us to. And this is it, my friends. So it's ours. We do this every week. This is what we do. We come to the altar. We give our whole heart and our whole life to God through and with and in Christ Jesus. And then we're made ready to eat his flesh and drink his blood so that we can be about his work in the world.